Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Players Lounge podcast. I'm Mainthi Langabini and I'm really excited about this episode because we're going to touch upon the World Test Championship final. I mean, it's the World Cup of Test cricket. Who wouldn't be excited about that? But also really excited because the guest in the house today literally lives in my house. Yes, that's right. My husband, former India cricketer Stuart Binney, is going to be joining us on the podcast. And in fact, both of us are going to be in the hot seat for this episode because the king of the dance floor, the king of Indian wickets in 2012, the king in his household, you'll have to ask his missus actually, but Graham Swan is going to do all the hard work and put us on the spot. So while Stu and I are really excited to share some of his stories with you, I've got to put out a disclaimer here because the youngest member of our household also happens to be the bossiest member of our household. Our young 10-month-old baby, our son Terence, is the one who literally calls the shots. Yep, we realize that pretty soon. So listeners, you will be hearing him in this podcast because, well, he wants to be heard. And whatever the baby demands, the baby gets. So bear with us and hopefully Terence will hear some stories about his dad. All right, Swanee, fire away.
Well, I tell you what, today I'm not just joining us, but I'm taking over your job, my auntie. I hope you don't mind that. It's the only way this can work. I feel like either a marriage guidance counsellor or a famous TV interviewer. I don't know what, but I've got the Binney family sat in front of me. Terence is back, and I love Terence. It's only our regular listeners will know that Terence makes cameos in our appearances, and he is brilliant. And our sound engineers work cut out to keep him, to mute him, basically. I hope they don't today because he's a vitally important part of this. So what I'm going to do, I'm basically going to take over because there's some big things. And first and foremost, I'm going to let us slip a bit of a secret on when we normally get guests on. I mean, my auntie does a lot of homework, don't you? You delve into the past of these players, you look up stuff, you ask for anecdotes from other players. We didn't need to do that this week because my auntie has all the gossip, all the stories, and I'm so excited for that. And first, I'm going to say this because the very first message that came in, so look, we're going to do Stuart, this is brilliant, everyone's excited. The first little secret that came from the Indian dressing room was the fact that Stuart made his test debut at Trent Bridge, which is half a mile down the road from where I'm sat right now, the home of Stuart Broad. Of course, Stuart Broad, Stuart Binney, have the same initials. And everyone thinks that, you know, the ground should be famous for Stuart Broad's home ground. But no. Within the Indian dressing room, it's Stuart Binney's home ground because he made his test debut there. Is this true, Stuart?
Yeah, Swanee, it's amazing, the story. I mean, I didn't know that he actually belonged to that ground until I walked into bat. And the English players let me know straight away that, you know, I was in his home turf. Because at that time, with my bat sponsor as well, I had SB84 on the bat, and then Matthew Pryor said, you know whose ground you're on right now. So I said, no idea. What are you saying? And then he said, you know, you're walking into Stuart Broad's turf. So yeah, it was a funny story and a lot of great memories in that ground.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that there's good memories. I'm not surprised at all to hear that Matt Pryor was the one straight away because he's Stuart Broad's best mate. And he sticks up for him like proper teammates and best mates do. But my auntie, I mean, you gave us some juicy gossip, obviously. But one of the things you sent through, which came through today, was that today, of all days, and very well done for whoever organised this, is the 7-year anniversary of a certain best ever ODI figures of 6 for 4.
Wait, before you say it.
Mantis has gone running away. Where is she? She's coming back. I think she's got... And she has, ladies and gentlemen, the ball. The Kookaburra white ball used as Stuart Binney took the best ever ODI figures, 6 for 4, against Bangladesh. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to let Stuart talk us through it, because the first 2 wickets, let's face it, they're lucky ones. Those who haven't seen, down the leg side, he's got lucky with a couple early doors. Looseners from a seamer. But the next 4 are absolute belters. That must be so good, thinking back to that day 7 years ago, Stu.
Yeah, I mean, it was only my 3rd game, you know, for my country at that time. I was really nervous because I hadn't played 3 in a row as yet. And I got that opportunity in the 2nd ODI. And hence, obviously, you can tell the ball is still brand new. So we didn't roll that much on that surface. We batted poorly at the start of that game and didn't have too many runs in, you know, in the bank. And when we went into that break, it wasn't even a lunch break, because we were all out in like an hour and a half. So we just spoke about bowling good lengths and good test lengths, you know, because the pitch had something in it and there was a bit of rain around. So we came on and off again a couple of times, and obviously it spiced in the wicket a bit. There was a bit of kick, you know, just a bit of a movement, and it suited my bowling, to be honest, on that day. I would have never thought in my life that I would even get 2 wickets in Dhaka, you know, the how flat the wickets are there. But just something happened that day, and the wickets really, you know, had some juice in it. And as you said, the first 2 wickets were poor. I mean, I tried to get the ball in the right areas. I was just trying to get my line and length going, but... I think once I found out that, you know, that conditions were helping me a bit, I went back to how I bowled back in Ranji Trophy and back in India, where my job was just to bowl tight lines and lengths and try and not give anything away to batsmen. And that's what I just went out and did that day.
And Mayanti, do you remember where you were on that day when these wickets were taking place?
Yeah, we were hosting. The network I was working with had the rights to that match. So I was there in studio, and I think actually I'd finished for the day because I wasn't doing the post show. We were doing like the wraparound the next day. And that was also he hadn't taken wickets before. That was his 3rd game. Yes, that was not only his maiden ODI wicket, it ended up being his maiden 5-wicket haul. So it was just all these numbers and these stats and these figures were being thrown at us. And at that time, of course, we know well in advance, because his broadcasters, they tell you that this is about to break Anil Kumble's record. Because Stuart had absolutely no clue when he happily walked out for the presentation. He's just thinking, wow, I got my 1st wicket. Yes, it ended up being 6. You know, this is really cool. And they're like, Stuart, by the way, do you know that you've done this? You know, it's Anil Kumble's record. So it was I had to downplay it, Swani. I had to act like really normal, like it wasn't my husband who just did this. I'm like, oh, you know, that was good bowling from Stuart Binney. You know, I had to completely yes,
well that's what I was going like, to ask you next. This is what I was going to ask you, and I know a lot of people, especially those in the know in India on broadcast, because I did the first time I met you and I worked with you. I know who you are and I know who your husband is. And I'm always thinking, what must that be like, actually talking, trying to talk down? Because you must be there absolutely buzzing. 6 for 4, and you're thinking, this is brilliant. You want to be punching the air and jumping up and down. But as the uber professional presenter that you are, you have to, like, it's just another bloke out there taking those wickets. Yeah. Good old India. The team result's the important thing, when we all know that that's rubbish. How hard is that for you to do?
It's hard because it's been... So, Stuart is way more romantic than I am, okay? And if he, when he got his 5th, he actually kissed his wedding ring.
Terence agrees.
I know. He kissed the wedding ring, okay? And that was like a subtle little message to me. And I didn't get it. Like, other people had like, oh, Mayanti, he's done that kiss for you. I'm like, wait, let me see it again. Like, look at that. He's kissed that. And, you know, Stu's like, babe, did you see that celebration was for you? And I was like,
she had no idea. We had to watch the highlights for her to get to know I did it.
So everyone else really makes
you aware.
Well,
I'm not surprised to hear that. All men are the same. I mean, Stuart, I'm with you on that. The first time my wife ever watched me play, I think I've told you before, I got 60-odd and 5 wickets, and she thought I was Samit Patel when I left the field. She couldn't tell which one I was. he's Indian, a foot shorter than me, and fat as a house. And she thought that I was him. So it's typical. We make all these big gestures and get nothing in return, Stuart. Am I right?
Yeah, well, it was. I think it was hard to downplay it that day. It's a little hard. Like, Sony, you've done it to me in studios as well, because obviously you're a big Rajasthan Royal fan. And, you know, when he's done well for RR, or he's just about done anything, I think now I'm a lot better at it, you know. But initially, I'd be very embarrassed, and I wouldn't know how to. And that was in 2014, that's 7 years ago. I had no idea how to deal with it. And I would just be embarrassed, which is so silly now when you think about it in retrospect, because this is lying in our showcase. It's, you know, something that he's going to learn up, our son's going to learn up and hear about. It's something to be so incredibly proud of. Every day this day comes around, the entire cricketing fraternity reminds you of the day, because he didn't know the date, by the way, Swanee. I had to tell him like a week ago, you know, that the 17th is coming up. He's like, what's on the 17th?
Well, that's cool. I mean, that's fine that you know the date. Women are good at remembering dates. I don't remember my own kids' birthdays or my wife's and wedding anniversaries. That's fine. But we're the romantic ones. Remember that.
Yeah, true. That's true.
So I'm glad you mentioned it, Manti, because Rajasthan Royals. I'm an unashamed, huge Rajasthan Royals fan. It's fair to say that the majority of the IPL career, Stuart, that you've had has been with the Royals. Can you tell us some of your favourite memories of playing for Rajasthan, or some of the times you thought, this is it, this is the year we're going to win this IPL?
Obviously, I have a lot of fond memories with them from the time. I did play a season with Mumbai Indians before I went to the Rajasthan Royals, but I just got that one opportunity for the Mumbai Indians, and then obviously got picked to go to the Rajasthan Royals, mainly because of Rahul Dravid. He was someone who saw me grow up in Bangalore and played a lot of club cricket for the same club. And obviously he thought, you know, I'd fit in nicely into that setup, which is a setup, again, Sony, which is very opening to guys coming in. You know, they let you be yourself. There aren't too many restrictions with, you know, how you got to play your game or how you want to express yourself as a cricketer. When I went in, Shane Warne was captain. So he straight away made us feel that we needed to express ourselves, right? And, you know, not hold back anything. Like, he never held back anything at all, literally. So so he kind of pushed us in that direction as young kids, 25-year-old. Really didn't know what the big league was about, but just to go out and express your potential, I guess. And I think that's why Rajasthan Royals is very special to a lot of the young guys who've come in. They've really gone on to make it big or be successful in the IPL. So memories is all over the place. I played with a great bunch, from Sean Tate to Warne to Dravid to Watsons, yeah. To, you know, I've had a journey, and which I don't think I'll ever forget in my life.
To most recently playing with Ben Stokes.
Yeah, and with the bench, like, and obviously me being an all-rounder coming in with Shane Watson at that time was one of the biggest names in the game, you know, when it comes to an all-rounder. So obviously I could learn so much off them. And then when he went away, Ben Stokes came in. And, you know, it's been a really special journey.
Is there ever a part of you that loves the fact, because we ask this to all our guests, and everyone always gives a very diplomatic answer, but I love asking this. And David Malama's a big one for this, when he spoke about AB de Villiers, who he was almost in awe of. He couldn't believe that he was there next to his hero as a kid. And I was the same when I first got in the England team. I was sat opposite Mike Afton, Alex Stewart, people who I had the posters on the wall. You just said there that Shane Warne was there at Rajasthan when you walked into that dressing room. Was there ever a part of you that just had to pinch yourself going, I'm actually talking, I'm now mates, I'm in the net with the greatest bowler of all time?
Actually, I felt that straight away when I walked. You know, he's got that personality about him. You know, I always watched him on TV as a kid, but I never knew how to talk to him. You know, so when I went and had a chat with him, I couldn't believe that actually I was, you know, talking face to face to him, and about cricket as well. And not only about cricket, he asked me what I liked, whether I went to the bar, you know, stuff like that. So, and I was like, no, damn, I can't believe I'm actually sitting here. And then I had to play him in the nets. And, you know, it took me, like, even though he tossed a few up, I just had the respect where I said, you know, listen, I'm not going to take him on this first six balls. I'm just going to play it on the ground, because I couldn't believe he was actually bowling at me that time.
See, that's amazing. A lot of people will be amazed to hear that you know, when you go into the Nets, you're trying to impress him first and foremost, aren't you? Show how good a player you are. But there's still that bit inside you saying, this is Shane Warne. I have to respect him. I don't want to come across as arrogant or full of, you know, lack of, what's the word, respect for him. And so I'm going to actually be sensible and block him. That's incredible.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it just took me like at least 10 balls to kind of, you know, start to breathe easy and, you know, try and hit the ball hard at least. I was just looking to cut him and fine sweep him and stuff like that. I didn't even want to use my feet to him because I'd seen all the videos of him bowling and I was just afraid to even step out.
Just to add on to that, the experience when you talk about youngsters in a dressing room, when you meet your heroes or you meet like these iconic players, I remember one incident where like he got a dressing down from Warne, and it was not the way that we give dressing downs in India, and it in a way kind of shook him to the core. And I think that was one of the few seasons or moments that kind of transformed Stewart as a player, because it kind of got him ready to, you know, the international arena is going to be rough. And I saw a mental switch in Stewart after that. So experiencing, or you know, being talked to in a certain manner, I think from players like Shane Warne, who've just done just about everything, really made Stu grow up very fast. And that's one of the, like, mentally grow up really fast and say, okay, you know, international cricket's going to be rough, it's going to be tough, it's going to be dirty at times. And I saw that switch in him.
Well, I think that that's one of the main reasons the IPL has made India a better cricket team, because I always find that whenever I'm in India, the difference between England and India is a politeness. In India, people beat around the bush a lot and they say nice things. And even if you know there's an air of someone's not happy, but it won't be very direct. In an English change room, or especially an Australian change room, it's in no uncertain terms. You get it ripped out of you, don't you? And that's what that sounds. So it makes people grow up, from a sporting point of view, I think, makes them sort of take ownership. And I think India have gone from strength to strength because of little things like that that have been added to how good their cricketers were. I don't know if you'd agree with that, Stuart.
Absolutely. I mean, it wasn't that I had, you know, played that badly where I lost a match or something. I misfielded a couple of times and you know, he could see it on my face that I was under the pump. And in between overs, he walked past me and he said something to me which actually made me worse, you know. And then the next ball got hit again to me and then I misfielded again. And I happened to pick up the ball after that and threw it at the stumps, and he was not backing up at that point, where he should have been backing up actually, but was having a go at me. So it made things worse, and everyone was, it was all chaos. And then Rahul Dravid's like, you know, don't worry, it's fine. And I just walked away, you know. And then, but after the game, I realized how crucial those moments are in a game, that I had to be switched on, you know, because I was still playing my probably fifth match for in the IPL, and you know, when you're playing in front of big crowds and you're not really used to it, you're not mentally switched on. Your mental state is all over the place. You know, crowds and who's there, and you know, I was looking at what Watson, how he was walking, you know, stuff like that. Till he said, you know, listen, I need you to be switched on. If you can't, please leave. You know, so then from then I knew onwards that I had a job to do for that 90 minutes out there.
I bet he didn't say, if you can't switch on, please leave, in those lovely words. I can guarantee he didn't say no.
Not even close to that.
But again, you mentioned something there, and that's something for me, because a lot of little boys and girls, when they're grown up, will watch these games of cricket. And I know I do it. I still do it now. I look at players in the outfield and think, what must be going through their mind right now when there's a huge crowd, there's a pressure moment. And as an all-rounder, I'm sure you're exactly the same as me. You would much rather have the bat in your hand or the ball in your hand, bowling or batting, than fielding. Because for me, fielding was undoubtedly the worst part of my game. It was okay in a test match if I could stand it slip. But if I'm on the boundary and there's four to win or whatever, and I'm thinking, please don't hit that ball at me. Hit it to one of the big guys, one of the quick guys. Don't show me up. And you, like you say, you're looking at, there's a film star, there's a Bollywood star behind you. Your wife is over there with a microphone staring at you saying, don't you mess up, don't you dare. I mean, that pressure when you're in the field, and your mind does wander, doesn't it? And you think of some crazy things.
For sure. I think I've been to that position, I think, 1,000 times in the cricket ground. And I always thought to myself, you know, why me? Why do only I feel like this? But I found out a lot of guys feel the same. You just don't want to make a mistake, I guess. But Sonny, I mean, you've played so much cricket, you know that the minute you start thinking like that, that's when the mistake happens.
Exactly. So, yeah, the minute you don't want the ball to come to you, it will come straight towards you.
Yeah. Seriously. And that's what happened when I was with Shane Warne, and in that instant that happened. It's because I didn't want the ball to come to me, because I knew I was under so much pressure and he was going to have a spray again. You know, he was fuming because the game wasn't going our way at all. And then the overthrows, and I misfielded two extra runs. And I was praying the ball didn't come to me, but it did. And then I threw again, and then he's like, "What are you here for?"
And my auntie, when does the switch off for you between presenter and wife or confidant come into play? Because obviously you say something like that happens and you can see it happening in the game, and you know you just want to support your husband, you want to get out and give him a big hug probably at the time, and you know, but you have to do your program, you finish. Is it immediately you walk out of the studio, does the phone come out and the text message, or do you phone out, talk on the way home, or is it everything has to wait till you get home, leave the game behind, and then break into being sort of less professional?
Well, so Stu's always talked about his games with me. He's not the kind of guy who says, "I don't want to talk about it." I think he enjoys, and I wouldn't say he's really venting, because he is someone who's able to let things go, because you're going to have more rough days than good ones, right? And he lets go of things very easily. And I know that about him. So let's say if he drops a catch or if he gets out, I don't think I take it as personally or as bad, because I also understand that this is just a cricket game and things, moments like this are going to happen. So I myself don't react like a lot of other people do. And of course, you know, if he gets out or something like that happens, everyone just looks at me and, you know, waits to see what reaction is she going to do. And I keep it covered. I don't really make a reaction, Swanee, because you're going to have another chance or another attempt. And like Stu said, he's an all-rounder, so he can always get a chance to, you know, for him, both innings matter. There's always a chance. If he doesn't do well with the bat, he'll do well with the ball. If he doesn't do well with the ball, he has a chance to make it up with the bat. So I know that about him. And if I took a tremendous amount of pressure about his game or his results or his good results or his bad results, then he's not doing his job and I'm not doing my job. You know, we both have to do what we have to do. It's not like you guys let me forget about it, though.
I was just about to say, this is where it's going to get really awkward, potentially. Because I was going to say, Stuart, do you ever sit down and say, "Look, today you gave a pretty decent opening, but you fumbled a couple of words here or there. You didn't introduce that player very well." Do you ever dare do the opposite role?
I've never once done it. I've got so much going on in my head.
Hang on,
and you have to play cricket. You really don't have time for that, because I can't make a mistake out there.
Swanee, he doesn't watch our shows, because we'll be on air just before he's getting ready for a show, right? So he's on the field. He doesn't watch our shows.
You can see yourself on TV, but everyone puts it on mute, because you're going to be saying something about me.
Well, this is it. I've been in India and I know full well, even if he doesn't watch your show live, at some point there's going to be a hotel room, because cricket is, for those listeners who are not in India, who've never had the pleasure of being in a hotel, there is non-stop cricket on TV. Imagine in England how much football there is, or how much talk about the weather there is. That is cricket times 10 in India. There are times, Stuart, I guarantee, where you've sat there, maybe with one of your teammates in the room, and you can't help but hear your wife talking about you on TV. That must be slightly surreal still.
Yeah, it's happened a lot of times, especially after games. Sometimes you come back and you want to watch the highlights. Maybe you've got hit a few good sixes or something like that. But then you've got to watch the whole show, right? And you've got to sit and wait till you come on to bat. Because I used to bat so late, I only got 5 balls in the game. So I've got to watch from first show through what they said. Or some of them say, "No, I can't believe he's actually playing in the 11 this game," and blah, blah. And, you know, it's just something that when we met, we kind of grew into, we just got so used to us having to be apart at long stretches or working or seeing each other on television. That's sometimes we were apart for like months together, where the only joy was to watch her on TV, you know, when I came back from a game, because that's how much I missed her at that time.
And nobody else got to do that, so you were the lucky one.
Yes.
In a way, yeah. But I got to say, Swanee, there have been some moments that have been so special that I feel not many people get to have. I mean, I waited a long time to host IPL, and when I did, you know, he was still playing in IPL. He's played 10 years of IPL, so I think I waited about 5 or 6 years to finally hosted, and you know, so the first time I did, he was part of that season, which was great. And Rajasthan Royals finished fourth that season. You guys had a really good season. 2015 World Cup, to be in Australia and, you know, together when he was part of the squad. I think when he played his first test match in India, it was in Bangalore here, which is his home ground, and I was hosting that match. So when you think back on, you will take all the things that have been rough or difficult, because there are very few people in the world who get to do something like this. And these will be memories that both of us will cherish for a really long time, because we actually got to share it. We were in the peak of our careers and we got to share that moment. And not many people get a chance to do that.
Yeah. Now, another thing. That's brilliant, by the way. I love that. It's gorgeous. I wish my wife was here too, so I could show her what she's missed out on by not following me closely enough. But one of the other things that you let us know about, and I've always wondered this, because there's one thing in India that I've always treaded very carefully around, and that is the issue of nicknames. Because in England, and in Australia especially, nicknames can be fairly brutal, or seemingly fairly brutal, even when they're not meant to be. And I know that there's one for Stuart Binney that was known as Rubbish Binney, that may have touched a raw nerve at some point. Is this true? Is this a true story?
It is a true story. I mean, see, because I was always called Stu in the dressing rooms in India and all over the place. But in Adelaide, when we were playing the warm-up game against Australia for the World Cup, I had this bunch of guys sitting behind me who kept going, rubbish, rubbish. So I just, why, this didn't strike me about why they were saying it. So I went and had a chat with our local manager who was helping us around, the Aussie guy. And then he said, oh, you know, when your dad came over in the 80s as well, you know, they used to call him rubbish as well. So I blamed on my dad, basically. It wasn't me. He was rubbish at the time, I guess. That's why he was called me. Rubbish Binney at that time. But I mean, it did hurt me a little bit, obviously, in the first couple of times when you called it, but then you just go along with it, Swanny. I mean, yeah, it happens in England, it happened in Australia. So even when I went over to play club cricket in England a few years ago, I was named Rubbish there as well. So it's just,
yeah,
I've got it.
Well, it all comes
now
down to, so we'll have listeners who won't be aware of this, but there are these tapes called the 12th Man tapes, and this is where it all comes from. And this was an Australian comedian called Billy Birmingham, who basically did a Mickey take of the Australian commentary team of Richie Beno, Bill Laurie, Tony Gregg. And he also did, which now would not go down well, very politically incorrect, but he would take the Mickey out of all the Indian players' names, because that was what he could do. And so Binney became Rubbish Binney, and the whole joke was Rubbish Binney was left out by the selectors last night and no one remembered to bring him back in this morning, so he didn't play. And it all comes from that. And I just remember when my auntie mentioned that the other day, I just thought, that is amazing. That I was a kid, I grew up listening to that commentary and laughing away, not knowing why it was funny, other than it was like a rubbish bin. So I apologise for my Australian cousins for that, because to be honest, as English, we feel guilty about everything that Australians do. Because, you know, hundreds of years ago, when their granddads were stealing biscuits, we sent them off to that paradise on the other side of the world to teach them a good lesson. And we didn't teach them a very good lesson, because all they did was become better at cricket than we were. So my apologies to anyone offended by that. But that's brilliant. Now, it's not just T20 that you've played. You've played the full gamut. You've played Test cricket. You've played ODIs. What is your favourite form of the game? I'm going to get a bit serious about cricket, because obviously my hands are up for Test matches. How about you?
I believe Test matches too. I think it brings out a special person in you. It brings out a character. It brings out your skill levels are, you know, a lot higher. You don't sleep through well. That you don't sleep well through those 5 days at all. In T20, if it's over, you've got to play again in the next day. So I would definitely say Test cricket is my number one.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Of course, that brings us on to beautifully the fact that India are currently, or arguably, the best test nation in the world, and they all haven't always been that way, even though they've always had probably the best batting lineup on paper in the world, but the bowling was never quite as high class, but it really is these days. So Indian test cricket's coming along beautifully in the last 10 years.
Yeah, I think also we owe it to the change in our system back in domestic cricket, you know, because 5, 7, 8 years ago, the wickets that we played on hardly gave us anything to bowl at. We probably bowled one spell of 5 overs up front and then came back after lunch, you know, just for another spell of 3 overs and waited for the spinners to do their work. And maybe if there was a bit of reverse swing and the pitch was that dry, we came into the game again. But the system kind of changed where we were, it was mandatory to leave 5mm grass on all our wickets in first class cricket. And obviously that helped. You know, that gave hope again to fast bowlers to come out and develop their skills again. It wasn't that you just came and bowled one or two spells and then the guys got a lot fitter because their workloads were a lot higher. So, I mean, yeah, obviously our batting has always been good. And that also helped our batting if you looked at it. Some of the guys coming in now can play pace and bounce reasonably well. And they're more comfortable playing that than spin because our spin now is going down a bit because we are not getting wickets that turn that much in domestic cricket anymore. So there is a flip side to that as well.
Yeah, there's a happy medium to be found. Now, this is something I want to know as well, because you come from a cricketing dynasty. You're from a family of cricket players where your father played for India, you played for India, and now we've got Terence. He's only a year old, and I'm not putting pressure on the little boy, but sometime in the future, is this the big thing in India? Would you love to sort of go through what your father went through and be able to watch your son don the pads, don the star of India?
I would love to see him play test cricket for India, I'll be honest. It would be something special. I mean, to have three generations to go on to play test cricket, or even for your country, is going to be something special. I mean, I wish he does like cricket first and foremost. Like, my dad never ever pushed me to go and play cricket. I actually enjoyed hockey more than cricket when I was growing up. But I just think it was a lot easier on my body at that time, hockey. And obviously, when you have a dad like that, you grew up watching a lot of cricket as well. I was taken to a lot of stadiums where dad was practicing or was at his, you know, end of his career. So obviously, being in a family, I mean, I don't think he will be able to watch me play because I don't know how long I'm going to be playing. But I would definitely encourage him to play this sport for sure.
I tell you what, he's got a very good eye there, because my auntie just walked up to do something and his eyes followed her sharply. He's going to be a batsman without a doubt, that little boy. He's certainly got the fire in his belly, because he won't sit still and he loves the fact mummy and daddy are working together today. My auntie, how would that be for you, thinking that you could have a superstar in the ranks? Do you think you'd still be as calm and cool and professional as a presenter if it was your son playing rather than your husband?
I'm not going to be presenting then, okay, for sure. He's 10 months old. I mean, unless he, I don't know if he...
Yeah, but you're the best in the game. You'll keep going as long as you want.
But I'll tell you one thing. She's going to be his coach for sure.
Yeah,
because when I was growing up, my mum used to coach me, not my dad. used to say, you're doing this right, you're doing that wrong. And
she
had no idea about
me.
So my dad used to sit there and smile. So I bet she's going to do that to him as well.
But no, Swati, why not? Look, we like Stu said, we will, of course, expose him to everything. And we will both expose him to sports and cricket in particular, because he's going to watch daddy's games. He's going to watch all those things. It's a huge part of our life. But yeah, people are already like, he's 10 months old. And people are like, he must be third generation test cricketer. If he wants to do it, it would be amazing. But if I wasn't as nervous when Stu was playing, I really do think I'll be a wreck when if he decides to pick up.
But were you really nervous when I played?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't that nervous. I still am not as nervous. You know, you feel a lot of emotions and things like that because you see these special milestones and you can be part of that. But I'm not nervous because he knows his game, right? I don't have that sort of like, oh God, I can't watch. Or there are a lot of partners who are like, I can't watch them get out, or I can't do this. I'm okay with that. It's like it's okay. It's part of the game.
Well, I can give you my experience as a parent of a youngster who I would love nothing more than if Wilfred, my 10-year-old, went on to be a test cricketer. Firstly, because I was a cricket player myself, I feel the pressure not to push him into anything. So I take a back seat, which has backfired because he doesn't want to be a spin ball. He wants to be a wicket keeper. I mean, what the hell? A wicket keeper? For goodness sake. I've told him that wicket keepers are all weird and smelly and sit in the corner of the changing room, but he won't listen to me. Then he wanted to be a fast bowler. I said, look, his favourite cricketer at the moment is Daddy, because I didn't buy him, because Gunnar Moore gave me some wicket-keeping gloves, so he thinks I'm a hero at the minute. Cricket-wise, I tried to coach him spin bowling for years, and he didn't want to know. I came home one day, and he'd had YouTube on the computer and was watching Uncle Jimmy Anderson bowl, and said, Daddy, I've learned how to bowl, and taught himself by watching Jimmy Anderson. I said, for goodness sake, I could have told you all this years ago. So all I'll say is just prepare yourself to be let down time after time because it's horrific. I went to watch him play the other day. Oh, dear. They play this lovely form of cricket in England where you start on 200 runs and you bat in pairs. And if you lose a wicket, you lose 8 runs or 6 runs. But you don't go out. You carry on for 4 overs. And they were winning. He went out to bat and he crunched a square drive for one and crunched another one. I thought, he's on it today. And then he got bowled. And it took the score behind, and then his mate got out, and it was just like the domino effect. And I watched this game run away from him, and I was helpless. I couldn't do anything. I felt dreadful. So yes, you are gonna be in a situation one day where you look on helplessly from the boundary. But I found I got fish and chips, and it got me over it. So maybe that's the way.
But what if your son does actually want to go through the professional ranks? And, you know, because it's going to be harder for their generation, right, Swanee? Like, we've kind of faced it with social media now, where his father's generation didn't have to face it. And I think it'll just be a different ball game by the time they're a lot older or even younger. They're going to face it at a much younger age.
Yeah, you know what? I was thinking about this the other night because I was at Trent Bridge, and Peter Moores is the coach at Trent Bridge, and his son, Tom Moores, who was only 5 or 6 years old when I was first played for England, and he used to come on tour and I'd give him throwdowns, and he's now playing professional cricket for Nottinghamshire. And his mum was talking, saying like the opportunities at his door now, at his feet, and all the things that have opened up to him that Peter never had, that you know, me, I never had, are incredible. But he's taken it all completely in his stride. And I think that's what we forget, isn't it? That you think it's going to be hard for your kids and you worry that your kids won't be able to do this and that. At the end of the day, you know, we've all been in that situation, especially as a teenage boy. And Stuart definitely backed me up here. You think you know better than everyone anyway, and no matter what people tell you, you're sort of inside, you go, I'm going to do it my way, I'm going to be strong, I'm a professional. So I'm sure that they'll all take care of themselves. I don't know if you think the same.
I agree with you, Swanee. Things change so fast in cricket as well. From the time when I started to play the IPL to where it is now, you can see the difference in standards as well. And even the young guys coming in, they don't take 5-6 seasons to do well. It's because they come in with that mindset as well. So for me to see some of the guys come in like in a year and already feel comfortable in that first couple of games, it shows that our circuits, our domestic circuits are also great, because we've been put under pressure straight away. And things were going to change day in, day out with social media. When I first came in, there was nothing. I mean, there was a little bit of Instagram and Twitter, say a few things about you here and there. But now you can't even breathe sometimes without people saying stuff about you. And for some of the young guys, I think they feed off stuff like that. They want to be in the news in order to do well, or in order to kind of give them that kick to perform or to do well. So, yeah, I mean, social media can work well for you, I guess.
Do you find it as amazing as I do that this social media sort of phenomenon? That I remember 2009, Jimmy Anderson and I just started Twitter as a race to see who could get the most followers by the end of the Ashes. And we would just put silly jokes on. We had no idea at that point. And that's not that long ago. That's what, 12 years ago. But at that point, it was just sort of something that people would turn their noses up. But now people make careers out of launching themselves and doing this and that. And you saw during the lockdown, people like David Warner using that almost as an income stream, making it, like building your brand, so to speak. So it is a strange new world we live in. I'm sure Terence will be fine. By the time he's 15, 16, honestly, there'll be something new. There'll be spaceships or something like that. We'll be playing cricket on the moon by then, so...
You're asking the wrong person about social media, because I think Twitter actually reached out to him like six times to say, are you still active? Are you alive? Because he's not tweeted something in 4 years. And Instagram, I'm like, can you please put out something, you know, just to let people know? Because I get it on social media. So like if people want to abuse Twitter, they abuse me, which is, you know, because they can only reach out to me. But if they want to actually genuinely talk to him, they're like, you know, what's up with Stu? Is because people think that if they don't see you on social media, you're not doing anything, you know? And he's still playing domestic cricket. He's been playing 18 years now, Swanee, and still going. So people are like, what's up with him? Is he okay? Is everything fine? We don't see him around. I'm like, yeah, he's fine. Because that's the assumption. If you're not posting on social media, then you're not in and about and around, you know? And
well,
is everything okay between
you
guys?
That. Yeah. I'm glad you said that, Mountie, because I was about to say, what's up with Stuart Binnie? I haven't heard from him for years. I mean, I keep posting on Instagram, but he doesn't talk back to me. I mean, is he still playing? I mean, what's going on? Are you, how long do you think you've got?
Are we
got?
Still married? Because, oh my
yeah.
God, no one's
oh, I
heard
knew
from
that.
Him yet.
But Stuart, I mean, you are still playing, Stuart, and you're still going strong. How long do you think you're going to keep playing for? Just as long as it means you don't have to feed Terence?
To be honest, I haven't really put a date to it, Sonia. I believe that I'm gonna play till when I wake up every morning. When I wake up that morning, and you know, I feel that my body can't take it anymore, and I'm dragging myself to that ground, you know, and not happy about it, and cranky with my teammates, and you know, really not enjoying that run around when you're warming up. I think that's the time I'm gonna really start to think about letting it go. I mean, it's not easy, obviously. I've thought about it a lot, but every time I thought about it, something in me hadn't yet finished, you know. I just felt like I still had something to prove, not to other people, but to myself. Since I had played 19 years of domestic cricket, I'm close to getting to 100 games in a few formats. So that kept pushing me towards, you know, I'm not a really stat-oriented guy. I mean, I really don't look into too many stats when I played or even when I'm playing now, but it's just that I felt that fire still hadn't left me, especially with the IPL. I still felt that I had a few years left before it actually ended for me. So that I think it's just a drive that I still have, and once I walk out and I feel like I don't have it anymore, I'm just going to call it quits.
Yeah, as someone who was supposed to retire through injury, you are a long time retired. Keep going as long as you can. I was watching cricket the other day. England playing New Zealand, obviously, in the build-up to the Test Championship final. New Zealand look a strong team. But I was thinking about it, thinking, why aren't they doing this? Why aren't they doing that? Why is he playing that shot? Why is my mate doing that? I just wanted to be there in the huddle. I wanted to be given advice. I wanted to be playing. I wanted to be taking that catch at the drop. I would have hit that for four. Cricket becomes the easiest game on the planet once you don't actually have to perform, once you're just thinking about what you do. Trust me, that's kind of nice, but it's kind of excruciatingly annoying as well. So my advice would be, just as long as you've got that drive and that ambition there, keep going, mate, as long as you can. Mate, Bansi, we've got this Dare to Declare section to do.
Oh, I'm waiting. I'm trying really hard to ensure that Stu can't see the questions.
Yes.
Because so this is strange. I never had to do an interview with someone sitting next to me.
I know. Right, Stu, you've got to promise not to look at these questions then.
I haven't seen them all.
You know how in India when we used to sit and give tests and exams, okay, we used to put our hands like this so that no one could like copy. So I'm going to have to do that. Just keep my hand here so that he can't copy and see it. But yes, our Dare to Declare segment, which is brought to you by Betway. And you mentioned it already, Swanee. It's, of course, about the biggest thing, which is the World Test Championship final right now. You've got to... I guess, Stu, could you call it in a sense the World Cup final of Test cricket? That's how we're seeing it. The fact that it's India, it's New Zealand, the fact that it's a neutral venue, you've played Test cricket in England. It's very different this time around because, you know, you've had New Zealand, which have played England already as they go into this Test match. India have not had a chance to play the county games and, you know, the kind of tour matches before. So that sort of preparation, do you think it will get you straight into the zone because it's a one-off Test match?
Yeah, I think that's going to be the challenge for the guys going in now. Plus, they've not played too much Test cricket in the last 6 months, you know. So I honestly feel that it's going to be a bit of a challenge. It's going to be a bit alien for them going into this Test match because, look, how much ever you practice in the nets, Test match is completely different. It's just the atmosphere, the pressure that is in that stadium, in that ground, in that pitch that you feel at that point. So I think it's going to be a huge challenge for India because coming back to New Zealand, they've been there for a while. They're breathing easily right now with that win, and the confidence is there with that setup. I think India are going to definitely feel it, and they're going to try to get in early into that game because that's the way I think the Test match is going to go. The team that gets into that game early is going to kind of run away with that Test match.
You did remember Ross Taylor, who joined us in our previous episode, because we asked him, Swanee, whether it's going to be all about swing and seam. That's what you expect in English conditions. You've got Rohit Sharma and Shubman Gill for India, who will most likely be opening. And there isn't much experience in England, especially for Shubman Gill. So how do you counter that? How do you counter the conditions if you haven't already been there before? And if you have masters of swing and seam in your opposition camp?
I think what he's got to do is just back himself and not try and change his game overnight. You're not gonna succeed if you go and try and play a different game in England. Yes, you've got to be a lot tighter. And I think with the guys batting there, I don't think, see, we've got Pujara, who's obviously, he knows the conditions. He's been there day in, day out. And he's never going to change his game. He's got to take a cue from Pujara, I guess. And if his game is to score runs, I think he's just got to just hang in there for 20 minutes and then try and play shots that is his strength.
Swanee, do you think it's going to come down to which team's bowlers adapt better to those conditions? Because we always have a chat about India in subcontinent, they tend to play that extra batsman, you know. But you might want to give bigger responsibilities to Rishabh Pant, who's done well overseas, and play an extra bowler if you're looking at the Indian contingent. Is it just going to come down to the bowlers and how they adapt to those conditions, those sort of combinations?
I actually think it's down to the batsmen, to be honest, because in India, the bowlers, the bowlers will always have an opportunity to get in. And watching the last two Test matches, both bowlers, both bowling units and both teams had opportunities to get back in the game. So even if the ball doesn't do anything seemingly for 20, 30 overs, it's always moving a little bit in England. It's always doing enough that if you get a wicket, the new man is a completely different game when the new man walks in. And what we saw when England played New Zealand is the wickets can be really flat and the outfields are rapid and it looks great for batting. A team gets to sort of 280, 290 for one, two or three wickets and you think they'll get 500, 600 like you would in India or Australia. But then they're bowled out for 350. So England got 300 in the first innings of the last Test match. New Zealand only got a lead of about 75. All of a sudden, the bowlers in the second innings, by doing nothing different whatsoever, they just put the ball in the same areas. The batsmen, because they were a bit tired, they'd had their first innings, they'd fielded, and they weren't quite as switched on. All of a sudden, 6-7 down. England barely got a lead, so bowled out for 140 in the second innings. That, to me, being as those batsmen in a one-off game, you have to say to yourself, right, I don't care how long I have to field, how flat the wicket I think it is, I am going to be on it like a car bonnet for the entire game. Because if I take my mind off it, if I think things are getting easier, if I think this is a draw wicket, we'll fall like cards. Because I think both bowling units are going to be exceptionally good on that down in Southampton. I think it's been hot and sunny, but there's a bit of moisture around now, so the ball will swing a bit. It's the batting team who can stay switched on for the longest is going to win that test match.
So who has the advantage then if it comes down to the batting team? Let's put Stuart in the spot.
I think New Zealand have the advantage at this point of time. Since they've already been there for a while, they've got some runs under their belt and spent some time out in the middle. So I would say New Zealand at this point.
Yeah, I agree because of those two test matches. On paper, man for man, India, of course. But momentum and all sorts play a massive thing. So it's intriguing. Honestly, I can't wait for this game. To have a neutral game played in my country and it's a world final and it's India and New Zealand, I think it's brilliant. I can't wait.
No, we can't wait either. I mean, New Zealand in a world final in England, I mean, you know it's going to be an awesome game. Just go.
Knowing Virat Kohli and playing under his captaincy, I think he's going to try and, if he wins that toss, he's going to try and bat. It's just that he likes to put, show his power at that point of time that, you know, we're not afraid to bat. I think he's going to do that. And just seeing the way the build-up has gone in the nets and stuff like that, they're preparing themselves to bat first and bat once and bat well.
Well, if you can bat once in England, you win the game. If it's one big innings, you'll win a game.
As you mentioned, Swanee, we're all, as cricket fans, as you know, Test cricket fans, we're intrigued by it, about what's going to happen in this World Test Championship final. But okay, I'm going to have to put my hand in the middle here, just so that Stuart, look that way. Close your eyes, actually, that'd be better. let's put Stu on the spot and try and get, you know, the first reactions that come to your mind when we speak about this. All right, so Stu, this is a hot topic. We have to speak about this. Who's the best young player in India right now?
Shubman Gill.
Okay, who is going to score the most, since we're talking about batsmen, who is going to score the most number of runs in the WTC final?
Rohit Sharma.
Who is, I love this question, whoever came up with this, who is the best captain that Stuart has played under? Across formats, across IPL, across India, you've played under a lot of international captains as well. Who's the best captain you've played under and why?
I would say Virat Kohli was right up there for me since he always took that game head on. You know, it's MS Dhoni was a very different captain. His style was a lot different, where Virat Kohli gave us opportunities and said, you know, take a risk. And I think that's why I would say Virat Kohli.
Okay. Technically this is not fair, Swanee, because I know that if he didn't play cricket, he would play hockey. But if you could be another sports person, who would it be? And it could be male or female, you know?
Roger Federer.
Really? You like Roger Federer? I didn't know that.
I'm with him on that one. Because I tell you what, that beautiful one-handed backhand from Roger Federer's, that is poetry, that is sporting poetry in motion, that backhand.
Wow. After how many years have you been married? Almost what? 10 now. After almost 10 years of marriage, I learned that you like Roger Federer. All right. Your favorite ground to play at? Or your favorite memory at a ground?
I think my favorite ground would be the Chinnaswamy, obviously, because it's my home ground and very few players have gone on to play a test match in front of their family and loved ones. So I think it would be the Chinnaswamy. But having said that, I think I've got a lot of special memories at the Lord's cricket ground because of my father having won the World Cup at that venue. And I actually sat at the same seat that he sat in when he won that World Cup. So I have got some great memories in that ground.
And you won that test match.
And we won that test match after 25 years, yes. Mm-hmm. Which my dad played in the last time we won. So some good memories.
Who knew you'd be getting a history lesson as well when you tune in and call the Binnies? We're throwing the centi at you. I know the answer to this. I know that your hero growing up was Roger Binnie, your father. But if I can ask you, forget the fact that he was your father, what did you admire in him the most as a cricketer?
I think it's just his work ethic was something that when growing up as a kid, in his era, there wasn't much training. Guys just ran one round, you know, swung their arms a bit. But I think Dad was always into a lot of sport. He did a lot of running. You know, I saw him do stuff which I never saw other players do. And I guess that's why it showed in his game, and him being a sports person from the time he was a kid. I mean, he used to throw javelin. He was a javelin thrower in school, and that's why he's got that weird action with his legs going, you know, complete opposite direction. So I think just growing up watching dad and his work ethics to sport, and not only sport, even with his golf right now, he sits and practices hours and hours. I mean, it's just for fun right now, his golf, but he's just got that drive in him.
Yeah. And that's one thing you also have. You work really hard.
Yeah, I think that's one thing I learned very early from him, that it's important to have talent, but talent will only take you to a certain place. You've got to work hard as well if you want to enhance that.
Stu spent 2 years at RCB as well. We all know that. So if you were part of that final in 2016. I don't want to remind you that you lost the final, but sorry, you guys did. But Stu, will this be the year that RCB finally win the elusive IPL?
Look, they were looking really good till things had to end. I really felt that they found a balance again. Even with that team that I played with, it was more about balance that got us to that final rather than superstars at that point of time. Because at that point, we had three guys from Bangalore who knew conditions and were playing that in that 11 at that point of time. And now RCB again with David Padikkal at the top of the batting order, again knows his game, he knows how to compliment someone. I think that's important, and I felt that this time they had a really balanced team, and I was wishing that they would go all the way.
So can they?
They will, like.
There we go. Got it. And finally, I'm going to tweak this question a little bit, because this is one of the biggest raging debates that we always have, Swanee, when you talk about modern masters and the big four, which obviously you've got Virat Kohli, Steve Smith, Joe Root, and Babar Azam. So amongst these four right now, who is your favorite? Who do you think? Forget the rankings. Who's rocking it?
I think Babar Azam is someone who's actually really played some tremendous cricket in the last 3 years. I think he's developed as a cricketer, not only coming from the subcontinent, the wickets are even flatter in the UAE where they normally practice and play, but he's also gone abroad and has the technique to play pace and bounce. And I think Babar has really been the person to watch in the last 3 years.
Have I trained him well, Swanee?
Honestly, incredibly well trained. You should be a guru. You should be like a media guru. I know you are anyway. I mean, you're a presenting guru anyway. May I just say this, actually, Stuart? In case you're ever wondering how good my auntie is, I'm sure you know. But I'm going to tell you that the first time I ever went to broadcast, an outside broadcast in the IPL, was at Delhi. And this game was just about to, you know, the warm-up was just about to start. And I was on the outfield next to my auntie. And just as we're about to go on air, like, you've got your little earpiece and you can hear everything. You think, this is swimming. The music started in the stand. And I think Virat Kohli came out to warm up because RCB were playing. And the noise in the ground was ridiculous. And it went from ridiculous to super ridiculous straight away and never came down. The noise never stopped. I couldn't hear a thing. I couldn't see the TV because the sunlight was shining on it. And whoever else was with me there, Ravi Shastri or whoever, we couldn't hear a thing. We didn't know what we were doing. My auntie somehow took us through the entire pre-match program without being able to hear herself, without missing a beat. If I've seen Sachin Tendulkar get 100 in Chennai to win a test. I've seen Shane Warne take 8 for. I've never seen a performance like that. So just never forget, she is the greatest sportswoman on the planet. That woman right there.
Why, sure.
Oh God, that is really sweet of you. But I have to say, it's because of you guys. Because my big secret here is that when you can't hear anything, you can't see anything. I just direct and produce the show as I feel. And hope the rest follow. Now, Swanee, thank you for that, because we've really had we've had a lot of fun together, and you know, live broadcast in stadiums is a different game, and I always enjoy it. You know, when it's professionals like yourself, and like if Stu gets into it, because it's a different experience for you. You know, you guys know how to focus in a different manner, and you know how to tune up the noise. And so it's really interesting to watch you as professional cricketers enter into the phase of broadcast with all these other things that are thrown at you.
I'll tell you what's interesting as well is you go from a dressing room where you feel completely at ease with your role and what you do. And even a nervous player will know that he's got a lot of skill to fall back on. When you get into broadcasting, you feel like a fish out of water immediately. And that day, honestly, I'll remember that day at the Kotla like the biggest day of my life, because I was petrified. I was like a little boy, first day at school with knobbly knees banging together because his mum's gone home. I was awful.
Oh, God. No, it was a lot of fun. Good memories. Can't wait for the day that, that actually resumes and maybe we'll throw a stew amongst the wolves because I'd like to see him in this world of broadcast as well.
I'm not looking forward to that, trust me, because whenever I go and visit her and she's in the studios, I look at her and I'm like, I can't believe she can actually do stuff like, because there's cameras all over the place. She's listening to someone, she sometimes doesn't even listen to the expert what he's saying because she's got to go on cue with the next one. And I was just sitting there and thinking, you know, I don't think this is for me. I think I'm just going to try and push my career for another 2-3 years. So I went back to the hotel and ran, started running the trip because I said, I don't think this is for me. I said, let me try and stay fit again for the next 2 years.
Well, that's brilliant. Well, you're both absolutely top of your games. And I'm going to thank you now, Stuart, because getting you on as guest is something that I wanted to do from the start of this. And I never thought Manti had agreed to it. So well done, Manti, for doing it. This was unbelievable. Thank you for letting me take the reins as well, because this wouldn't have worked. This wouldn't have worked because you can't ask your husband deepest, darkest secrets, you know, and get honest answers. And I'm glad I was allowed to take the reins. So well done to both of you. Well done to Terence again, who's without a doubt a star of this show. This podcast would be nothing without T-Bone, T-Boy.
Without a doubt, the boss of the household as well. You know, everything works on Terence times. But no, thanks so much for all of you for listening into the Players Lounge podcast. You know that you can always listen in to subscribe to our channel and you'll get the link for our podcasts when you do. And of course, big thanks to Betway for helping us come up with segments that tend to put our cricketers, in this case, my husband, on the spot.
Absolutely.
Swanee, thank you. Absolute legend that you are for being able to get Stu to actually smile in front of a camera because it's taken... 4 or 5 years for him to be comfortable enough to do things like this. So thank you. You're a true champ for doing that.
No, thank you both.
I've had a lot of fun, Sony. I mean, I grew up as well watching you play and it's nice to be sitting and chatting and having a few light moments.
Top man. Anytime.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.